Welcome to Faith and Family, a radio outreach of Family Life Center International. And now from Greenville, South Carolina, here's your host, Steve Wood.
Hello, this is Steve Wood, and welcome to Faith and Family. I'd like to thank you for joining us today as we continue our series entitled, How to Prepare Youth for Life in a Homosexual Culture. You know, I must say the news this week was rather unsettling when Ireland, the first nation in the world to legalize by popular vote so-called same-sex marriage, and that vote was by a 62% majority, and it passed in all but one of Ireland's 43 districts. And you see what happened in Ireland, I would think parents here in the United States have to ask ourselves, could it happen here? Could a popular vote actually take place where we see the American people legalizing so-called same-sex marriage? Well, the real fight for the future is obviously through our youth and young adults, and Gallup has found that 8 in 10 young adults from both political parties support the legalization of same-sex marriage. Ouch. Do you get that? And another research by the Pew Research Center done in 2014 found that young U.S. Catholics overwhelmingly accept the legalization of same-sex marriage. About 75% of 18 to 20-year-old Catholic young folks accept and are willing to vote for the legalization of same-sex marriage. Folks, we've already lost the next generation, and not just by a thin margin. And I think the focus of what we're trying to do here is preparing youth for life in a homosexual culture just got ramped up several degrees. And today, I want to share with you what I believe is the number one way to fight the spread of same-sex marriage, as well as the number one way to defend your children from the homosexual activist movement. But first, I'd like to start with a story. It's a true story, and it occurred in the beautiful mountains in western North Carolina, just about a mile from Greenville. For a few years, Pat Madrid has had apologetics camps for Catholic teenagers, and I've been very impressed with the type of Catholic young person coming to these apologetic camps. And this one particular summer, Pat Madrid asked me to give one of my, what I thought was my better apologetic talk. So I really let it rip and gave the young people the best talk that I could consider giving them. And then right afterwards, I opened it up for a Q&A session right after my talk, and hands shot up everywhere. And of course, initially I'm thinking, boy, they must have really liked that talk. And actually, the question was this: how do we convince our friends that homosexuality is wrong? And then somebody piped up and said, well, the question came up last night. And Pat said, well, Steve will be here in the morning. You can ask him. Thanks a lot, Pat. And a bunch of the other hands went down. In other words, there weren't 20 different questions at a camp with some of the finest Catholic young people in the nation that I've encountered. The number one question clearly on their minds wasn't, is justification by faith alone or by faith in works, or is it sola scriptura, or is Christ really present in Eucharist? I mean, those are important topics, but in their minds, the number one apologetic question was, how do we defend the church's teaching on sexual ethics, particularly when it comes to homosexuality, because their friends, it seems like Teflon. You begin trying to share with them the Catholic viewpoint, and it doesn't really stick. So what I did was take a very deep breath. And the reason I did so is this. At least in my understanding, there is not a magic pill that's going to quickly and easily convince the younger generation that legalizing same-sex marriage is a wrong idea. It's not going to be easy to convince them that homosexual activity is wrong. I compare it to what I call magic pill counseling. Magic pill counseling is when there have been years and perhaps even decades of very unwise decisions made, immoral actions made, and then somebody contacts a counselor, and how do I easily and quickly reverse all the consequences that have stemmed from these behaviors and actions? And honestly, even though a lot of people put out easy, quick answers, they don't work. And where we are today, the fact that thousands, in fact, tens of thousands of Catholic young people in Ireland, many of whom don't even vote usually, and some of whom even flew back to Ireland who were out of the country to vote, most of those young people had 12 years of Catholic education. So if we just continue doing everything we're doing, it's going to be the same result. I mean, what logically could you expect? So while I offer no quick fix to the situation we are in, I'm going to begin telling you what I told those young people up in the mountains. And it starts with this, real simple. There is the need to reestablish a belief in a creator. It's not by coincidence that the Bible starts in Genesis with God creating the heavens and the earth. It's not by coincidence that the first line of the creed says, I believe in God the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth. It's not by coincidence that the faith chapter of the Bible, Hebrews chapter 11, which begins with, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. And then Hebrews 11 goes on to list any number of examples of faith, but the first one it mentions in Hebrews 11:3, by faith we understand that the world was created by the word of God, so that what is seen was made out of things which do not appear. If you do not have a creator, I do not see how you can convey to a young person how homosexuality is wrong. Why? We understand things from a perspective. We call it a worldview. I can remember one of my fellow hosts on EWTN lamenting. I just can't understand, he said, why young people can't see the obvious design and complementarity between men and women. Well, what if those young people have been going through years of education and have been brainwashed to believe that there is no design, that it's by random chance that somehow from molecules to men we have appeared on the scene, and then you want to build a set of ethics on top of random chance? You can't do that. And in fact, what we've been looking at here for several weeks is Romans chapter 1. And St. Paul, when he talks about the pagan world that existed in the first century Rome, where did the pagan world go off the tracks? It went off the tracks, he said, when it lost its belief in a creator. And as a result, there was consequences. It affected their views of religion. It affected their views of morality. It even affected their views of themselves. And they couldn't see the complementarity between men and women. And it's deja vu in the 21st century like the first century. We're right back there. So while I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people recommending all these kind of books and programs and plans for young people, but just remember this. This is one verse. It's from the book of Psalms, chapter 11 and verse 3. And I personally believe it's so important to this. It says this, if the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? You see, I think so many of these efforts dealing with the spread of same-sex marriage and trying to convince young people it's wrong and such, we've been working on how do we get the 99th and 100th floor of our big structure straightened out? Meanwhile, the enemy goes right for the foundation. Because if the foundation goes, the entire faith goes. If you go for the first line of the creed, the entire creed goes. This happened in my own life, and it's happening in millions of young people's lives today, including Catholic young people. 78% of 18 to 29-year-old Catholics believe that same-sex marriage should be legalized, according to the Pew Research Center. How could they ever come at such a concept? It begins long before you get to the question of same-sex marriage. It begins with your whole view of the world and how it got here, who made you, and are you accountable to anyone, or did you just happen to appear accountable to no one? These have immense consequences. And honestly, for 50 to 60 years, huge mistakes have been made in Catholic education and Catholic spiritual formation. And I'll be talking about that in a minute. You have to get the foundation right in order to have the superstructure right. And if you begin just placing doubt in the veracity of the building block of faith, God is creator of heaven and earth, the whole building comes tumbling down. And let me just share with you how Pope Pius XIII expressed this in his encyclical on the study of Holy Scripture. He said, quote, "The young, if they lose their reverence for the Holy Scriptures on one or more points, they are easily led to give up believing in it altogether," unquote. This is important enough to go through again because I believe the world, especially Europe, Western Europe, and the United States, has actually turned a corner. We have lost our bearings for civilization. And to get them back, we need to learn where we went off the tracks. And here it is, quote, "The young, if they lose their reverence for the Holy Scriptures on one or more points, they are easily led to give up believing in it altogether." So you see, it's very easy. You just get rid of the first couple of chapters in Genesis, and the whole thing comes tumbling down. Folks, Genesis 1 and 2 are not non-negotiable. Here's why. In Genesis 1, we read, "Male and female, he created them in his own image." You see, to deny the maleness and femaleness of human beings is to really impugn not just human beings, which it does, but the image of God himself. So where do we learn this? We learn this in the first chapter of the Bible. But see, the first chapter of the Bible is the one that's been under attack since the theory of evolution basically became accepted in Christian circles. Didn't know what to do with it. Let's go to the second chapter of the Bible. What do we read there? About marriage. We find that in Genesis 1, he created them male and female, and then he brought the man and the woman together in marriage. Where do we find that? We find that in Genesis. So if you are taught that Genesis is pious myth in a religion class, you have just taken out the basis for which a young person or older person has to believe in a creator who made them male and female, and a creator who brings a man and a woman together in marriage. That is the foundation for both your worldview, your entire belief system, and your beliefs regarding what marriage is to be, and it's certainly not same-sex marriage. Now, we go on in Genesis 19, there's Sodom and Gomorrah. I had a friend who was just flabbergasted because he went to a priest and the priest was somehow accepting of homosexual activity. And he took to him the Bible and, you know, read Genesis 19, read Romans 1, and the priest just simply said, are we going to deny sexual relations to those who aren't married? And my friend was just astonished. He couldn't understand how a priest could believe such a thing. Well, any person who's been through a seminary that teaches priests or pastors, Protestant pastors, that Genesis is just pious myth, that seminary, Catholic or Protestant, is setting that young priest or pastor up for a moral fall. Now, this doesn't happen all at once. This has been going on in seminaries in Protestant circles since the 1920s. And in Catholic circles, it had about a 50-year delay. But I dare say the significant majority of Catholic and Protestant seminaries at this moment in time are teaching future priests and ministers that Genesis is very pious myth. And if it's pious myth, then you take out male and female, Genesis 1, you take out the man and the woman for marriage in Genesis 2, and if Genesis 1 and 2 isn't true, it's just pious myth, why not just throw Genesis 19 about Sodom and Gomorrah into the mix? It all goes out. Now you're saying you're just kind of making this up. I mean, depending on Genesis 1 and 2 to build a case for marriage? Well, the reason is I'm following Jesus Christ. Jesus was challenged about marriage. And we read in Matthew 19, the Pharisees came up and tested him about marriage. And how did he answer? Matthew 19:4, he answered, "Have you not read that he who made them from the beginning made them male and female?" That's all Ireland needed to believe this past week to defeat that bill for same-sex marriage. And where did Jesus' answer come from in Matthew 19:4? Genesis 1. Haven't you read that he who made them male and female? That wasn't pious myth. That was truth. And there was only one person in existence when that occurred. And that was God himself. And God was now giving the answer about what happened. Let's go to the next verse, Matthew 19:5. And then Jesus said further, quote, "For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." Well, where did Jesus get that? Genesis chapter 2. Genesis 1, Genesis 2 is how Jesus defended marriage against the attack when he was attacked concerning marriage. Why can't we? This is exactly where you need to go. You go to Jesus in Matthew 19 and just follow Jesus back to Genesis 1 and 2. If you have that belief system as a young person, you're not going to be voting for the legalization of same-sex marriage. Now, this isn't an easy task, though, because you're talking about at least the Catholic education system. Now, I wasn't raised a Catholic, and I didn't attend Catholic schools, so I'm open to emails if I'm wrong. But it's my understanding, at about the 1950s, and probably in different places it came a little different time, that basically theistic evolution was bought into in the Catholic education system as well as in the religious formation of children. They were basically taught that the way we got here was through evolution, and theistic evolution would mean that God guided the process. Now, again, we really need to think about where we are. And I think what happened in Ireland again this week is a great example, because these young people who were so wholeheartedly voting for same-sex marriage, the vast majority of them came through 12 years of Catholic education. So something would need to change, or some kind of defect there that's not getting across. And I'm not saying this is the only thing, but I'm saying this is the primary thing because it's the foundation. There is a study done that asked the question, young people who leave the practice of their faith in their 20s, when did they become doubtful of Christianity? And you're probably aware that most parents, maybe you listening right now, and priests, assume that young people lose their faith in college. That's the common belief, but that's actually not accurate. A survey was done of young people who leave the practice of their faith in their 20s, and we're talking about 60% of those who are active in the church during their teen years, 60% leave the practice of their faith in the 20s. But, you know, of all those who leave, guess what percentage lose their faith or doubt their faith seriously in college? It's only 11%. 38% had their first serious doubts about Christianity in middle school. And 43% had their first serious doubts in high school. Again, only 11% in college. Now, again, listen carefully, 60% of those who are active in the practice of their faith during their teen years, 60% of those leave in their 20s. That means this 60% that leave the practice of their faith were having their major doubts while they were in Christian education and youth groups. Something was lacking that allowed their faith to come under such corrosive doubt that it ended up causing them to leave their faith as soon as they got out from the home. So here's what I propose is what's going on. If you give young people the answer to the challenge that God is creator, give them the answer of theistic evolution, without giving them solid reasons for the theistic in theistic evolution, it's really worthless. And I've heard this done over and over and over again in Catholic media and books and homilies. You just can't say to young people, well, it's evolution and it's theistic. God guided it. God puts brains in young people and they're smart. And when all they hear is that God guided some process and they're not told why or how, in other words, not given reasons, they basically see from a very long distance the white surrender flag go up the pole. You basically are just saying, well, the Bible isn't true because God really didn't do this. No, young people need reasonable evidence. And what we are often giving them, listen to this, is simply an adjective. Giving them the word theistic doesn't get them through the doubts of middle school and high school and college. They need more than an adjective to get through. You need to give them reasons why they should believe that. Now, in addition, there's a couple of reasons why theistic evolution is passé. I do admit that in the 1950s and maybe early 60s and such, it might have been a worthwhile strategy. But what has happened since then? You need to be aware that theistic evolution in practice now becomes simply evolution. And I want to use a case in point. I'm not going to name the college because I don't like to pick on colleges on the air. And it's a good Catholic college. I sent my own daughter there. But in biology class at one of the colleges in the top 20 Catholic colleges and universities in the Newman Guide, she got in biology and not a word about anything about God or even the theistic side of evolution, just straight Darwinian evolution. This is what's happening with our young people when we send them off to very expensive colleges. The problem with this is that since the development of the electron microscope and the discovery of DNA, there's no longer a thing called the simple cell or simple life. There's no such thing. Evolution teaches from simple to complex. There is a development. And what we've found now, that life, even the very individual cell, isn't anything like simplicity. It's highly complex, loaded with intelligent information. It's been intelligently designed by a designer. And if you have a designer, you have a creator. And if the creator has a design, that means men and women start to pattern their lives, including their sexuality, after that intelligent designer. So I dare say that following the, and there's a lot of definitions for theistic evolution, I understand, but simply saying from simple to complex doesn't work because we no longer know through science that anything is simple. It's very complex, information loaded, and I suggest intelligent design would be a much, much more effective way to build reasons in young people's minds of a belief in God the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth. And if you just want a couple of names, first is Stephen Meyer and his book, Signature in the Cell. Stephen Meyer's expertise is with the information within DNA. He also has a wonderful DVD series entitled Does God Exist? And either of those two resources from Stephen Meyer would be excellent. And then second, Michael Behe, author of Darwin's Black Box, The Biochemical Challenge to Evolution. You've been listening to Faith and Family, episode number 78. I'm your host, Steve Wood. Visit us at dads.org and stay in touch with Faith and Family. Till next time, may God bless you and your family.
Faith and Family is a radio outreach of Family Life Center International. Visit us online at familylifecenter.net. To order a CD copy of today's broadcast, order online at www.familylifecenter.net.